Full Service Radio programming is available on our website, fullserviceradio.org, and as a podcast, thanks to Simplecast. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
In the woods there grew a tree, and a fine, fine tree was he. And on that tree there was a limb, and on that limb there was a branch, and on that branch there was a nest, and in that nest.
Happy May Day, everybody.
Happy May Day.
May Day.
This is the song
May Day.
Around
May Day.
This is the Maypole Dance from The Wicker Man. It's May 1st, and we're the Sun Cinema Podcast. Jason?
We are. Welcome. This is a weekly radio show that examines the highs and lows of the medium of film through the filtered lens of Washington, D.C.'s only privately owned art house cinema. I'm your host, Jason Cauley, and I'm joined, as usual, by my two co-hosts, Dave Cabrera. Dave.
Hello.
And Ryan Mitchell.
Hey, Jason. How you doing?
Doing well. We're coming to you live from the Full Service Radio Station inside the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan here in our nation's capital. So,
it's a beautiful day.
It's a beautiful May day.
So, I guess I've been informed that our listenership has just been skyrocketing since the early days of our podcast. And since there's so many new listeners, I thought I'd sum up kind of what we do with our calendar, which is each month.
It's a good time to talk about it.
We come up with a theme each month, and we kind of program all the days and all the movies around different cinema experiences. And we present them each night at our little cinema in Mount Pleasant. David.
Yes.
Do you want to tell us about May? Because I know sometimes we just pick months of movies that we all know and that we kind of are our favorites.
I think it's safe to say that this is not that.
No. Yeah. I don't know anything about anime. I mean, I know a little bit.
I don't either. So it'll be a good. Yeah.
Give us it.
So the month is called Anime. M-A-Y. Because it's May. Do you get it?
We got
Are you following? It's going to be
amazing.
Amazing. So the way that we normally do our months, if you were looking at a calendar right now, this would make way more sense. So hopefully you're looking at the calendar. We encourage people to look down the calendar. So like basically like every Tuesday will be a thing, every Wednesday will be a thing, etc. This month, all of the Tuesdays are nights dedicated to short films from different Eastern European countries, Russia, basically behind the Iron Curtain. So the first one is tonight we're doing a night of Russian animation. We're doing a Yugoslavian one next week, Polish. Then we're doing a night dedicated to Jan Svankmajer.
Jan.
Beautifully said.
Is it?
Yeah.
Right?
Jan Svankmajer?
Yeah.
Right.
Svankmajer.
Yeah. Where's he from? He's Czech, right?
Czech?
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
We'll say Czech.
He's Czech.
He's either Czech or Polish.
We could check.
Nice.
Thank you.
Damn.
And then the last one's going to be an Estonian night. The Wednesdays, we're doing kind of a bunch of different things. Wednesdays are sort of a modgepodge. Tomorrow night, we're doing a pretty cool night, a night of early Jim Henson animated works. Ryan?
That should be pretty cool. It's like not just his puppetry, but a lot of the kind of screen animation that would go on top of puppetry or mixed media stuff. He did a lot of jazz animation that will be kind of fun to show.
Cool. We're doing a night where we're showcasing some like late night cocktails just to let people know that we're open late and we're a bar after we do screenings. We're doing that next Wednesday. We're doing this movie Allegro Non Troppo, which is like a Italian response to Fantasia or something.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be kind of meta. I don't know. It's about a guy trying to make a Fantasia or something.
It's like the 8.5 of Fantasia.
It's the 8.5 of Fantasia, yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. Perfect.
It's wild looking.
Yeah. Then we're doing Pharaoh Hawk. Our friend Tarek is presenting the works of Winsor McKay.
Cool, like turn of the century animation. Yeah. First to use keyframe animation.
We talked about it this weekend, actually. He said he wants to score it, like play.
I was going to ask if he was going to play.
Like live score?
Not live score, but like just play music that he wants to play over it.
He's a great DJ, so
it'll be fun.
Yeah, those things are just ripe for having
I think that'll
cool
also
music.
Get more people to
oh, for sure.
Come. Then the final Wednesday is Fehér Lófia. It is a Hungarian animated movie about The Son of the White Mare is what that means. It's about the son of a horse.
And this one was so good that the first time we showed it, this was like in the first month or two of opening. Uh-huh. It was so good, but not a whole lot of people came to see it the first night. You threw it on the calendar. You like took something off the calendar and threw it back on the end of the calendar because you're like, guys, you like made more people come out to see it
totally.
Again. Because it's so good.
It's very psychedelic. It doesn't look like it's from the 80s, but it is.
Yeah.
All the Thursdays we're doing cartoons, just like episodes of cartoons. So Thursday is Adventure Time, Cowboy Bebop, Samurai Champloo, The Boondocks, Aeon Flux. A lot of people are asking, oh, are you showing the movie? Or please,
Don't not animated.
Please don't be showing that movie. Friday are all Japanese animes. Is Mind Game technically? Yeah,
I think they're all anime.
Yeah. So Akira. I don't know a lot about Akira. TBH.
I know it's like it's classic cool. 80s. I know it's the cool one.
I've heard it's really cool.
Yeah. It's about a.
It was like one of the ones that kind of put a stamp on anime as like, hey, this is like.
This is a real thing.
Be warned. Yeah. This is only going to get better.
Yeah. And I think it's a bit of like a kind of like cyberpunk epic too. I think it, like you said, it kind of made people, especially in the U.S., see anime as a legitimate.
It was the first one I would say, yeah, in the U.S. where. Even in your local video store and stuff, you saw posters, you saw like more than one copy, that kind of thing, which was big given the time.
People definitely like it because it's already sold out.
Yeah.
oh, wow.
The following week, if you enjoy crying, Grave of the Fireflies, that's about World War II, right? More or less, nuclear.
Yeah, why? So this is kind of interesting anecdote. This is the only Studio Ghibli movie we're showing, right?
Yeah.
So, do you want to jump into that
is
real quick?
Is Paprika technically Ghibli or no?
I'm not sure.
It might have been initially, but now it's Sony. Yeah, so the problem with Ghibli is the same with... Is it Ghibli or Ghibli? We've been over this.
You know, I'm not going to try.
I say Ghibli.
Ghibli. Okay, maybe Ghibli.
Ghibli. Okay.
I'm wrong. Yeah, Ghibli sounds right.
My 12-year-old daughter is heavily into it, and she says Ghibli.
Must be right.
She's probably right. Yeah, so it's the same thing with Disney for whatever reason. So we're a very small cinema. We show things predominantly on DVD or Blu-ray. Occasionally, if someone has like a 16mm print of something and they have the projector and they want to project it, we'll do that. But for the most part, we just do everything digitally or through a computer. Most movie theaters do shit through this thing called DCP, like Digital Cinema Package. It's its own kind of software and hardware. It would cost us so much money to be able to
do that.
And so Disney and Ghibli both only allow you to show their movies on film or DCP, which also sucks for us because Buena Vista, Walt Disney, that also includes Life Aquatic and some Royal Tenenbaums.
And Rushmore. They bought Fox.
And they bought Fox, but that hasn't affected us yet. But we're like, that was me knocking on wood.
Yeah. Is that the entire Wes Anderson catalog falls
into
that?
No, just some of the earlier ones, I think. Cause we
just
did
the colorful, symmetric ones.
Right. Yeah, just the classics.
Just the classics.
Yeah. So that's the deal. So that's annoying. But
so that's why we're not doing a lot of good.
That's why we're doing Allegro Non Troppo instead of Fantasia also.
Okay, and then we got the Friday after Fireflies is Paprika.
Paprika. I don't know a lot about that one either.
That's so good.
Yeah?
Oh, Jack's a fan.
It's a genius scientist. Dr. Asuka Uchiba is a genius scientist by day and a kick-ass dream warrior named Paprika by night. In the psychedelic sci-fi adventure, it will take the skills of both women to save the world.
I know it's a favorite among anime fans.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not even like an anime person like that. I've probably only seen a handful, but this is good.
Sure.
And then the final one I have seen, and it is nuts, called Mind Game. It's from 2004. It's about this dorky guy who gets killed kind of at the beginning and then gets a second chance at life. And it's there are like 15 to 20 different styles of animation throughout the movie.
Oh, wow.
It's incredibly psychedelic. It's all over the place.
Sounds like RoboCop, how you're describing it.
Yeah.
He gets a second chance at life. It's
It's basically the animated version of RoboCop. 1 month after. Yeah. Perfect. Then what else?
Okay, Saturdays.
So those are Saturdays are, you know, also kind of Majipot. Fantastic Planet is one of the coolest animated movies, right?
I know it's one of your favorites.
It's definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So it's in French. It's animated by a Czech guy. It's got that kind of like pencil style, like Monty Python style.
Yeah,
animation.
Hugely influential on Gilliam and Monty Python.
Yeah.
Great colors. I mean, just
cool soundtrack. Also
cool
has
soundtrack,
this real
great color.
Yeah.
Like and 70s funk kind of.
Yeah, spacey funk. And yeah. It has like a cool, interesting political angle to it. And
totally.
Like a philosophical angle.
Yeah. So that one's great and it's weird. Then the following weekend is we're showing a thing called Sun Sin with a sequel.
Ooh,
anniversary party.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, that could be neat.
Sorry, we've been open 2 years. Somehow we haven't burned down the whole block.
Come May 12th. We're not there yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let's not talk about that.
Let's not count our chickens.
So how are you celebrating?
We're just gonna be open as a bar and do a lot of drinking, and we're gonna put a bunch of sequels on in the background.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, there will be some surprises.
There'll be a few surprises.
You'll just have to show up.
I'm gonna try to make a punch that would be called The Secret of the Ooze, but
I'm going to call it the Shrek 2.
Or the Shrek 2.
Whatever punch he makes, it's called Secret of Ooze. Right.
Slash. It's got to be green. That's all we know.
We just have two green punches. Which one do you want? The Shrek 2 or the...
Yeah, that's a good idea. We're spitballing here. Afro Samurai Resurrection following Saturday.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. Fail University is a, it's a comedy show.
And then what's on Sundays?
Sundays are all... those are more like classic... Sundays tend to be the, you know, more art house fare, classic things. Uproar in Heaven is a 1963 Chinese animation.
With what's the main character?
The Monkey King.
Okay.
Monkey King.
Based on that whole story. Vampiros en la Havana. Vampires in Havana. Thank you. I'm actually half Cuban. Yeah, Vampires in Havana is a classic animated Cuban movie. It's about like bureaucracy, and there's a lot of vampires. Mm. Alice is the...
Czech stop motion?
Yeah, that's Frank Meyer.
Cool.
Right.
And then American Tail is the final Sunday.
So the one everyone knows.
The only one of those that anyone knows.
So you could say that Sundays are creature features.
That's true, yeah.
Ooh.
I didn't even think about that. But Ryan caught that.
I was saying a monkey, a vampire, a white rabbit, and a mouse walk into a bar.
Yeah.
That's also a cinema. Kind of works.
I would have laughed, but I had coffee in my mouth, so I apologize.
Could have spit it out.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's...
All right. Well, that's cool. Our month. So, to recap, we don't know all but maybe three of these movies total.
Yeah. This is a...
Between us.
Yeah. Those are more fun months for me sometimes. I mean, it gets a little old when people are like, come up to the bar and they're like, oh, what's da da da? I'm like, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
But it is fun to sort of be along for the ride and just try to push and see what people will, you know, pick up
definitely.
On.
Oh, definitely. Have you had any people come up to you and start recommending things that we didn't show, that we don't have
for
on the calendar?
For this month?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot.
It's going to happen.
I mean, animation especially.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, even more than usual, we're going to get people like, oh, you know what you should have shown?
People are like, Aladdin. Watership Down. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Such a bummer.
That's such a bummer. I'm trying to think of what else. Definitely some Ghibli stuff.
Of course. That's going to come up.
Yeah.
You know, one day, it'd be great. There's
Bocce. A lot of people were asking about why we didn't. I was like, that was on the list. I'm not sure. I think I was thinking that Tarek was going to do that, and then he didn't. So,
thanks, Tarek.
Thanks. If you're listening, you're not.
What a letdown.
You're definitely not.
All right. Should we take a little breather? And then let's get back to celebrating the 1st of May and talk Wicker Man.
Ooh.
But let's take a breather.
Thank you.
Sneaker Pimps have a cover of this song, actually.
Do they?
It sounds like a trip-hop song.
It totally is some trip-hop song. Oh, David, how was last week? What did we show? What were the highlights?
So we did... Oh, excuse me.
Jesus.
Hot mic.
Coming in super hot. That was me.
So we showed this movie called Taking Root that was about a Kenyan woman who started planting trees to sort of fight the government. They were doing all this deforestation shit. It was really good. It was very inspiring. It also got into some of the history of like colonialism and like people coming in and just being like, oh, we know it's good for you. And like, we're going to knock down all these trees. It got into like religion too, which is, I thought was really interesting. We were talking about, you know, they came with like Christianity and like it had some good points, but like they totally didn't give a shit about our land and all this stuff. And like, so that was interesting. The next night we did Bad Brains and Dead Kennedys shows. Those were great.
Oh yeah, those were really fun.
How was the crowd?
It was cool.
It was cool. There's no
everybody pretty chill.
Yeah, people did, no mosh pits,
no beer cans being thrown. Yeah, unfortunately.
But I think Jen was wrong last week. You know, people liked banter. The banter was good. The stage banter from the Dead Kennedys show was like entertaining.
That's half of the
yeah.
It's pretty good.
I think you either take to that or you don't. Obviously, Jen was in the latter category.
In the latter, yeah. Then we did On the Silver Globe, which is just one of the most fucking nuts movies I've ever watched in my life.
Oh, man. Yeah. I was going to come to that.
Dude, it looked amazing.
It's 2.5 hours of just absurdity. The whole thing about, like, was this movie, like, did this movie need to be made is a really... It's a really good question, but I'm really glad that it was. Like, I mean, he starts off the movie, and the narrator is like, "This is like 4/5 of a movie. The other fifth was murdered by the state, and I'm going to be talking over these parts that were taken out." Just like,
so it's like commentary.
Random montage.
Yeah,
I mean, it was just a bunch
director's
of, like,
commentary without.
It was basically Hodorowski's Dune.
Okay, cool.
No, I mean, it was like just. Cool, like sci-fi, weird landscapes, like beautifully shot. But then the whole time, just people like giving existential like asides. That's the way that everyone spoke the whole entire movie.
Cool.
Then randomly, there was like this like Batmobile-looking cop car in the desert. At a certain point, like I wasn't sure which planet we were on during a scene.
Right.
I mean, it was the kind of thing like after the movie, everyone was like, "What the fuck did we just watch?" It took everyone a while to sort of figure it out. Anyways, mostly good weird, a little bad weird.
Cool.
RoboCop, I don't know. Great. Maybe you've heard of it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Way more violent than I remember.
It's so violent.
Oh, it's insane.
It's like almost like
violent.
Body horror. Like, it's cool. Fail University is a comedy show. We did that. That was fun.
Yeah, audio worked out. Everything was great.
Barely made that happen. Wings of Desire, also, man. Oh, yeah. Come on.
Never heard of it.
I think that's a perfect Sunday movie.
It is a perfect Sunday movie.
Like, because it's intentionally so optimistic about humanity. The whole thing is like, most of the movie is these two angels are sort of hovering above, you know, and listening to humans think. And it's just pulling like their best thoughts and their most articulate thoughts as if this is how humans really think.
They get it.
Yeah. And then it has this really cool scene with Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds at the end where he's playing a show and it's so cool.
Reminiscent of Yardbirds.
Yeah, kind of.
Blow Up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
So yeah.
Nice,
anyways.
Nice connection.
Cool.
So that song that we were just listening to.
Yeah, the song we were just listening to was Willow's song as she was singing in the night trying to entice a police officer to come to her bedroom and join her.
And she's like dancing and she's like knocking on his
wall. It's Wicker Man.
Can we talk for a minute how weird a movie
how
Wicker
great
Man
it,
is.
What year is this?
73. Yeah.
Yeah, the movie is, well, talk about like just weird, absurdist. It has this cool pagan...
Yeah, give us the premise first. Give
premise
us
the is a police officer...
In case somebody hasn't seen it.
A police officer has received, probably from mainland England, has received a letter saying that there's a missing child and a picture of her. And her name is Rowan Morrison. And he has a picture. And he's flies up to this small island called Summer Isle. Like, I'm...
Scottish
Scotland.
Island. Yeah.
Yeah. And... He's there to investigate this child. But, like, right away, no one in the town is giving him a straight answer. They're telling him when he shows the picture, they're like, oh, that's not Miss Morrison's daughter.
Right. There's a claim she never even existed.
She never existed. So isn't quite sure if she exists or if she's really missing, if everyone's covering things up. And the further he goes into it, it just gets more confusing. Some people are saying Rowan is a rabbit. And then he's finding out that they're very much these like free love pagans who celebrate the planet a certain way, and they grow crops, fruits and vegetables on this island. And perchance they're sacrificing people, and he's trying to get to the bottom of this. The whole thing is pretty damn weird. Great. The highlight, I would say, is Christopher Lee as Lord Summer Isle.
Yeah.
Christopher Lee in and of himself. I mean, just we were talking earlier about, you know, just the incredible feat of who Christopher Lee is. But
yeah,
in this movie in particular, just the hair and the height and everything. I mean, like
I would be a part of that cult.
Yeah, yes. Even just walking around on that Scottish Isle, like you see him and you're like, oh, he's such a formidable force.
Yeah, he's so charming and like sweet in this paganistic way.
Right.
And then when the cop is trying to like push him over questioning, he just owns the cop. He's has the upper hand, and in a very charming way, it's like, well, please do whatever you must, you know, but he's obviously not giving this guy an inch. He just keeps on shutting him down. Maybe we should go over why Christopher Lee's a badass.
Are you familiar with some Christopher Lee background, Dave?
Sure.
Or Jack, are you familiar with this?
I'm not at all.
Oh man. Dude. Biggest badass to ever grace the screen.
Yeah. First and foremost, he's six foot five.
He was Dracula, yeah.
More than once. He's entered into the Guinness World Book of Records in 2007 for the most screen credits, having appeared in 244 film and TV movies by that point in his career. He was still alive at that time.
He made
14 more movies, so he capped out at 258 with actually 259 due out later this year. Some old footage that's going to be used. But, I mean...
Okay, so already impressive.
Already, you know, if you just said, hey, this guy's been in more movies and TV, you know, film and TV movies than anybody else, that's kind of a nice cap. Not even scratching the surface of what this guy's done in his life.
So that's his, like, career. And then let's, like, look at before he's even born. His mother was an Italian Contessa. This is according to Gizmodo. His mother was an Italian Contessa, and through her, Lee descended from Emperor Charlemagne of the Holy Roman Empire and was related to Robert E. Lee, the Confederate general. So already the guy's going to be some weird character.
Growing up, goes into World War II, joins the Royal Air Force, wasn't allowed to fly, he had an optic nerve, so he became an intelligence officer for what was ultimately the forerunner of the SAS, British Special Operations Forces. Fought Nazis in North Africa, going to like, I mean... Again, this is, you know, all according to Gizmodo, but I've read some of this in other places as well. But, I mean, he basically, there was one great,
having fought Nazis on your resume is...
fought Nazis is pretty...
A top line item right there.
Yeah. We're just getting started. He's like 19 when he's fighting Nazis.
Yeah, and continued to fight Nazis because he spoke French and Italian fluently. He spent his time after World War II continuing to hunt Nazis with the Central Registry of War Criminals and Security Suspects until he decided to give acting a try at age 25. So all of the stuff beforehand preceding this was all done, you know, as a British SAS officer in his early 20s, doing like 5 missions a day in World War II.
He had already been an Inglorious Bastard before starting acting.
There's a if we're up for it, there's a little scene of him correcting Peter Jackson on set.
Yes.
From Lord of the Rings. Let's listen.
This isn't the stabbing one, is it?
Let's see. Here we go. Yes.
You ought to see me with a 357 Magnum. I'm awesome.
When Wormtongue rises up and comes up behind Saruman to stab him, of course, it was my job as director to talk to Christopher Lee and to explain to him what I wanted. So I started to go into this long explanation about what sort of sound he should make when he got stabbed.
I seem to recall that I did say to Peter, have you any idea of what kind of noise happens when somebody is stabbed in the back? And I said, because I do. It's because the breath's driven out of your body.
He proceeded to sort of talk about some very clandestine part of World War II.
He used to be in the British Secret Service, whatever they were called, the OSS.
He seemed to have expert knowledge of exactly the sort of noise that they make, and so I just sort of didn't push the subject any further. I just said, well, you obviously know what to do, Christopher, so I'm sure you'll do it great. And he did.
Wow.
Yeah, you're directing like one of the biggest budget pictures ever, but listen, yeah. You don't know shit about stabbing someone in the back.
That's incredible, though.
Yeah.
He's an insane guy. He was a huge Tolkien fan, even obviously before all of the Lord of the Rings and stuff. I mean, like supposedly read the Hobbit and Lord of the Rings trilogy once a year for the majority of his life.
Cool.
He was the only member of the cast to have met Tolkien personally. Wow. Apparently it ran into him in some pub and fanboyed out, and Tolkien gave him his blessing to play Gandalf in any future Lord of the Rings movies.
Oh, wow.
During this encounter.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and then they play Saruman.
Cool. Yeah, it's just, I mean, like, this guy is...
He was in The Man with the Golden Gun. I didn't realize he was in a Bond movie. That's cool.
Yeah, wait.
And he's actually second cousin to Ian Fleming also.
Wait.
Jesus.
Yeah,
that's not a
joke.
That's not a joke.
He's really, really related.
So he could. I mean, actually, he would have been a pretty, probably decent Bond if he wanted to be.
Yeah.
He would have had to be an early one.
Cut his hair.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Gizmodo does mention, like, as just portraying some of his roles here. While best known for his portrayal of Dracula in countless films, he's also starred as the Mummy and Frankenstein's monster. Of course, he's known as Saruman in Lord of the Rings and Count Dooku in Star Wars prequels, but his other villainous roles include Fu Manchu, Rasputin, Rochefort, and of the Three Musketeers, and blah, 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 and Lord Summer Isle of Wicker Man, which I don't fully think that Lord Summer Isle is a bad guy, really. I mean, that town seems pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
Well, last but not least, despite everything, like, to do with the 6 degrees of separation of Kevin Bacon, you can imagine 259 films in, nobody really matches that kind of game better than Lee. And it said he connects to virtually any actor in as much as 2.59 steps. So 6 degrees out the window. He's got like almost everyone in 2.5 steps can get to Christopher Lee.
2.59 steps of 2.59. Christopher Lee.
Yeah.
I know. I wonder if we're in that club.
He was in Gremlins too. I forgot that.
That's what I mean. Like he
range.
259 films.
He's played Sherlock Holmes and his brother Mycroft.
Yeah.
And probably also Sir Henry Baskerville, the Hound of the Baskerville.
All in the same movie.
All right. So he's pretty cool. Speaks several languages. All right. How many Nick Cages is Christopher Lee? Because there's a shitty remake of Wicker Man that I'm pretty sure... David, you're the only one who's seen that, right?
I haven't seen it. No, really? I've seen the scene. The punching scene.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the scene.
Yeah. I just remember seeing that. I was like, how is this the same movie?
How is what this, is going this on movie? Here?
You know, I guess we have to, right?
Yeah, definitely.
What is that? Oh, no, not the beast! Not the beast! Ah!
Just to put this into perspective, this version of the film, this is the 2006 remake of Wicker Man, has a 3.7 IMDb rating, which, if you're not familiar, anything under 7 starts getting a little shaky.
What is the original?
The original is like a 7. It's like 7.4 or something.
Nicolas Cage actually corrected the director and asked if he had actually ever had bees put in his face like that. He wouldn't know what sound it was, but Nicolas Cage did.
Well, Nick Cage has an Oscar, and I don't think Christopher Lee does.
No, oh, no. Really?
Yeah.
Damn.
That's a truth.
Bummer. couple.
No, that's the thing, because when Cage is on in something like Leaving Las Vegas,
Leaving Las Vegas.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it's great. That's the thing. When he's great, he's really great. Like adaptation, things like that.
Yeah. It's, Valley Girl.
Yeah, Valley Girl. Holy cow! Yeah, his early work is very strong. But I mean,
have you ever seen Raising Arizona?
Rumblefish.
Have I ever seen Raising Arizona? Let me talk.
Yeah, he does suck in Rumblefish. Actually, Nick Cage in the making of, he's fine. He's like the guy who steals the girl.
Right.
In it. But in the making of, they have this interview with him that's longer than any scene he's in the movie. And he's like, you know, when I was playing that role, I thought of this African lizard that when he's ready to strike and he's at his utmost violence, he looks like he's smiling. And that was the character I wanted to portray.
This is why you had...
It's like, dude, your uncle's a director.
Yeah, your uncle's Francis Ford Coppola.
You're not channeling some lizard, dude. You're just a Coppola.
Yeah. So wait, the question was how many?
Yeah, how many? How many Nick Cages
is Christopher Lee? Oof.
Is he 3.7 or 7 points?
It's better than 2.59, I'd say.
Yeah. More than 2.59.
Yeah. That's tough.
Come on. I got a calculator. Let's do it real quick.
2.59.
Yeah. I would say he's about pi. Christopher Lee is pi. Is pi Nicolas Cage's.
Yeah.
I like it.
Let's take another weird break to some dumb music from Wicker Man, and then let's talk Marvel and the future of filmmaking.
Yeah.
It was upon a llama's night when corn rigs are bonny. Beneath the moon's unclouded light, I held a while to Annie. The time went by with careless heed, till tween the late and early. With small persuasion she agreed to see me through the barley. Corn rigs and barley rigs and corn rigs are bonny.
Corn rigs and barley. All right, guys. I saw Infinity War last night with my movie pass.
Yeah, yeah. All right. I'm just getting back to the mic. I had to take my headphones off during the interlude.
You afraid you might get converted?
Maybe. The bees, man. The bees.
So yeah, I saw Infinity War. It's pretty good. It's it's like concise enough. It's for everybody in this room who doesn't care about the Marvel movies. There's been like 10 years of them now, basically, yeah, since Iron Man. And they've taken over the entire box office.
They really own it, don't they?
And this was like everything was culminating to this moment where all of them, the entire universe of these
again,
characters,
this is pretty simple. Infinity War, you know, it's all of the Marvel universe coming together,
exactly,
to fight one bad guy, right?
I mean, yeah, that's the premise. And they've kind of been like highlighting him, teasing him, and slowly showing this main character, Thanos. That they have to fight.
Played by Josh Brolin, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's a cartoon.
Right.
He's not even him. It's pretty, the movie has pretty good humor. It keeps on cutting the scenes, mix matching different characters that are usually in different groups.
It's like a MacGuffin, right? There's a thing. There's these stones. If you recover all the stones, then you have infinite power. So he's going after him. And
exactly,
all the Marvel Universe superheroes go, hey, we got to stop this guy.
Yeah, it's kind of a MacGuffin. That's what they've all been for, like, years. He's been trying to get these stones, and you're slowly finding out about him. Now he's trying to get them. Blah, blah, blah. It's kind of a MacGuffin. They kind of do have something they can do. They're not just like a...
Right.
They are consequential, kind of.
Right, right,
but
ultimately, they do play in toward the end, right?
Yeah, but sure. For the sake of a MacGuffin, yes, it's a MacGuffin. So it's pretty funny. It's pretty entertaining. And they didn't screw it up, I would say. Like, I was happy with the ending. Cool, blah,
there's
blah, blah.
A lot of big names.
But, yeah, there's so many big names, and there's so many damn characters in the movie. But I don't want to, like, spoil anything. Not that our podcast is where we'll spoil this, but I don't want to spoil it for anyone, especially for Jack. But I did read a good review of it in The New Yorker. Send it to you,
yeah,
Jason.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a great article. It just kind of talked about... It was a bigger piece on not so much just a review, but how Marvel and this entire franchise has kind of repurposed, repackaged, and is now redistributing the way we think about movies.
Definitely. So Richard Brody's article in The New Yorker is called Avengers Infinity War Reviewed. The latest Marvel movie is a 2.5-hour ad for all the previous Marvel movies.
Yeah, that's a pretty strong out-of-the-gate statement.
Yeah, and, you know, I had not thought of it that way. Like, clearly it is just trying to cram in a bunch of stuff to get your money and get you to buy popcorn. I get that. But thinking about it this way really makes sense. He kind of posits the idea that with streaming now, this is, hey, remember all those movies you may have seen over the last few years? Maybe you have some gaps. Maybe you need to rethink them.
Right.
They're all available online. You can start streaming them at various times. So it really is like Disney, who's one of the only production companies who has a series that can think this big. It's like, make a movie that is to generate people going back and watching these streaming.
Right. Yeah, they get you coming and going. You're not just going into the movie theater, having a nice viewing and going home, maybe even telling people about it. They're not even as interested in that as they are packaging this entire universe together.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty well packaged, but it is like, yeah, we binge Stranger Things. How about you can be in a consistent, continual binge of Marvel?
Yeah.
Which is scary.
Yeah, missed Iron Man 3, or can't quite remember something from, you know, the Civil War, go back and review it.
Exactly, you know. Yeah. So
it's partly how they put that together, right? Like, there's no... For a 2-hour and 40-minute movie, they still don't, like, spend any time on exposition. When a character shows up, the character is just kind of there and is taking their part, right? I mean, according to the review.
He minimizes that a little bit. I think you're going to see that in a lot of reviews. It's like, oh, everyone, you know, there's so many actors, they can only give them two lines.
They pop them in.
They're very inconsequential. But I do think it's a little step above that. It's well thought out how they interact. They use their previous characteristics and motivations to interact with each other in different ways. You're having super egos and alphas having to interact next to another one. And there's like, you know, there's a lot of cleverness. It was pretty tight. They obviously were afraid of how much shit they could get from a, you know, Twitterverse or whatever.
Right.
So it's a little concise enough. It does kind of give room for some minimal amount of character development. But this is like at a low bar, I'm giving it this. This is like, yes, basically it is just adding a bunch of these characters, so you'll want to go watch more of them.
This looks like it's a part one of two, right?
I mean, it's not even a part one of two anymore. It's just a continuation. Ongoing thing.
That's a fair point.
They originally were going to do Infinity War 1, Infinity War 2. And then a while back,
Infinity part. But yeah.
Well, in the comics, there's several more Infinity like series to do with this stuff, and they're already really ridiculous. But with this one, here's one of the kind of little clips he's got in there. If the Russos, these are the directors, don't offer a substantial quality of imagination to fill out the mental space of the movie's running time, or for that matter, any of its scenes or even shots, they at least offer a generous, even a profuse quantity of it. Yeah. So they do give a ton of explosions, a ton of humor. You know, it's kind of how the Star Wars movies have been going. A lot more jokes kind of peppered all over the place.
Right.
So there's a lot of jokes. The humor is pretty decent. It's all pretty entertaining. But what he says is it comes complete with hardcore light shows, absurd heroic gestures amplified by visual and sonic clamor. Boom. And that's pretty much what it is. So what I wanted to talk about, now that you've heard my little spiel about Infinity War, is where are movies going and how is this so different from maybe the 70s where it was the director days, you know?
Right.
The auteur.
The auteur in the studio. Yeah. Give somebody who's got great vision a lot of money and go make great movies like The Godfather and, you know, Jaws and all the other things that came out of that, you know, Taxi Driver, all the things that came out of those guys in the 70s.
And a lot of these were really well viewed. I mean, the ticket sales, for we were kind of throwing this
around. Yeah, this kind of surprised me. I don't know if you've still got it pulled up, but, you know, just saying how we think about ticket sales versus, you know, revenue anymore can't even really think about it the same way.
Yeah, well, okay, here's one New York Post a while back writing about Star Wars. It was talking about viewership and, like, what ticket sales are. And The Sound of Music, which made, like, $198 million, isn't, like, a huge budget maker. However, it would be number three with ticket sales if we were to adjust this for ticket prices.
Right. You mentioned The Sting.
The Sting is in, like, the top 20, which is... Oh, quality movie. That's cool. I mean, that's kind of entertaining movie.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. That surprises me. That.
So these things are looking at how to make the most money. I don't think people are going to movies as much as they were in the 70s and 80s. You know, that was the one thing.
We've got all the options now.
Yeah.
Too bad Zizek is in here for this.
I know he could spiel around on this.
We'll have him back.
Definitely.
If he'll have us.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very much, they've just figured out how to get more money out of it. And like I said, I'm entertained by the movie. But right. it is a scary thing to think about, the medium of film getting moved further and further away from art or a specific vision.
I start to say, art, but not art for art's sake, but back toward a singular vision of a filmmaker. And the idea, I mean, you're just not going to get that in the Marvel Universe. They've got this thing, you know, I can only imagine when I'm picturing it in some boardroom somewhere, just the strings running from each character and all the possibilities of how they're going to play this out. That has, you know, virtually you're blocking out everything that's going to be structurally significant in the film so that the filmmaker is just kind of showing up and making sure that bigger vision beyond his is just being achieved in that hour and... Well, two plus hours.
two and a half hours. Yeah.
Spider-Man Homecoming was 2 hours and 10 minutes or something, you know? Like,
to say these are formulaic is an understatement. I mean, they're like algorithmic. They are thinking next level of like who they're adding in, where they're shooting. You can see just by the locations of this.
Right.
They're thinking like, how do we get peak interest in the most places in very specific ways, merchandising.
Driving people towards specific...
It doesn't surprise me that Richard Brody, the guy that wrote that article, is also he's the one that did the book on Godard, right? The biography on him. So his perspective, I'm sure, that seems to fall in line with, you know, if you like Godard, who was about sort of fucking up the formula. Uh-huh. You know, his whole line was like, you know, every movie has a beginning, a middle, and an end, maybe not in that order. Right. So he's very familiar with, you know, a broader idea of what cinema is.
Yeah.
And so for him, I'm sure he looks at this and he's just like, okay.
He wasn't even, I mean, I picked kind of scathing little clips from it. It's not even a scathing review. He's like just trying to honestly describe what's going on. And he gives, you know, credit where it's due and how they're good at this formula and achieving this. But this is what we're achieving with movies.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure... groundbreaking, innovative stuff like Gremlins was also
exactly.
I mean, I love shitty movies. Totally. I'm not gonna, obviously, you know, I like shitty movies.
Yeah, no, I mean,
imagine how good Gremlins was in the theaters like at the time, though.
Dude, Gremlins is great.
Yeah,
I'm trying to remember so if I good. Saw
it was
that
good.
In the
it was good in the theater. At Sun's for sure. That was one of the more fun ones. Everyone's just kind of geeking out the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh man, for some reason, we weren't able to show it last Christmas because it was taken out of distribution.
Oh, yeah.
But I had already made the best trailer of just slow-mo of the Gremlins trashing some bar just to the Twin Peaks theme song. And it looks so damn cool. One day, we'll be able to show it.
It's coming back.
Yeah.
And this pivots to my next point, Gremlins. When are they going to get bought by Disney? Anyways, I think like maybe one movie that's not Disney this year might make the top 10.
And that's it. I mean, if you look at what was it last year, you said...
Or, in the last few years...
Several years.
the top 10 movies, 9 of them are Disney Studios in some degree, and the other one was Jurassic World.
Right.
Which is...
which could just be another Disney movie.
I think it doesn't. It's not even as smart as these. At least Disney has like a huge team of quality to make their shitty money making movies like kind of concise. Jurassic World is egregious, but I'll also see it in theater.
Yeah,
and did.
Yeah, and did. How did we get here? Workers of the World Unite. It's May 1st.
How is Peter Dinklage? Because we talked about him last week, and he was in this movie.
That somewhere. Character is completely just thrown in. It's kind of ridiculous. I mean, he's fine. He doesn't get to like show his range.
Not his much.
Chops. He's taller than anyone in this movie. True. Spoiler: he is like taller than everyone.
Wait, what?
Say that again.
Yeah, believe it or not, cinematic special effects these days, they made him bigger than all the characters. He's bigger than Thor.
Are you just like screwing around, or is that true?
I mean, is Marvel screwing around? No, he really is bigger, but it's arbitrary. It's like, oh, cool. He plays a dwarf, but they're in space, so he's giant.
I see.
Oh, okay. Duh.
That's what the movie's about.
You know, dwarfs in space.
Yeah. Oh, now I get it.
Yeah, dwarfs in space. So see Dwarfs in Space if you haven't seen it. I recommend it in 3D IMAX, Dwarfs in Space, Infinity War.
And
yeah, we're good
to play us out.
Yeah, yeah. Play some weird music, and David can have his bagel.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org.
Witness Full Service Radio.
I'm Jack Inslee, the founder of Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio is an internet radio station and podcast network that broadcasts live here from the lobby of the Line Hotel. We have 32 shows a week with 50 local hosts.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. I am your host, Geronimo Knows.
It's about finding authentic voices and the voices of DC, people that have been here doing things in this city. I mean, I'm basically here 24/7, and not because I need to be, because I want to be. It's such a cultural hub, and it's always buzzing with friends, with radio hosts, with travelers, with guests. If I'm not recording, I'll be upstairs at the bar having a drink at a Rake's Progress. Everything there, every detail is just so gorgeous. It's just a really fun place to unwind at the end of a day. I love everything at Brothers and Sisters, but I especially love the knife-cut noodles, the octopus hot dog, all these unexpected takes on American classics. In the guest rooms, you're seeing all these details and touch points from the local creative community, like photographs from Kate Warren, who's a host on Full Service Radio, furniture that was sourced by Morgan West, another host on Full Service Radio. So these local touches are throughout the hotel, from the lobby to the guest room to the radio. What I've learned is that DC is not just politics. It's art, it's culture, it's food, it's community, it's so many things under the surface. And I hope that travelers can find that as well when they